Proudly brought to you by SNL 24. And it's a pleasure to have you guys on here today. And who better to start the show with than the most successful, arguably the most successful captain in our nation's history. The man needs no introduction at all. His name is Neil Tovey, and I'd just like to thank him today for coming through. Mr. Tovey, how are you doing today?
Yeah, very, very well, thank you. All good. Thank you, Kamal.
Awesome stuff. So the first episode, I think it would be fitting for us to start with our national team and the team that you were so successful with. But there's been a lot of conjecture and, you know, dispute as to how he's conducted the team since taking over a couple of years ago. So I just wanted to get a few of your thoughts as to how we can get the national team to where it was once, you know. And the first question I'd like to find out from you is, there's been a lot made of players not going enough abroad to the big leagues in Europe. But during your time, there was a lot of locally based players, yourself being one of them. I just wanted you to give us an idea of how competitive our domestic league was at the time when we got reintegrated into international football, and how important it was for us to have a competitive PSL / NSL for a good national team.
It's very, very important. The competitive week in, week out matches, just raises the level of all the players in various areas. In our early Bafana days, there was no players overseas, so you can't say it's the ultimate that it has to happen with players overseas. It's just, it obviously did help immensely when they started going and going into those highly competitive leagues. But I think it's a mental aspect to each player and how they conduct themselves mentally in their own environment. And I think you need to have a team with guys that are mentally strong, very, very, very strong in the mind and the will to succeed. And that comes in various forms. When you do get spoilt as a team, you take the spoiling, but you still do more. And that's one of the areas that we have today. I don't know if the players are that, they are spoilt, and some rightly so. Some are rightly so. You don't mind being spoilt as a football player. And there's you can only have around 500 PSL players, professional players in the country. So, and you're one of them. So, but you've always got to give more. You scrutinize day in, day out. And it's important that the competitive edge gets maintained the more success you get. And that's where the criteria lands. When you achieve success, how do you react to that success? And when it's not going so well to you, how do you react to not going so well? And you have to have, you have to have a really, really strong mind to go through those ups and downs and the pathway to of your game. So it's vitally, vitally important.
Okay, interesting. Obviously, you led the strongest contingent that there's ever been as far as Bafana is concerned. I just wanted to pick your brain about what were you guys as players and maybe the federation at the time, what were you guys doing in symbiosis and working together that maybe is lacking at the moment between the players and SAFA? Is there maybe a disconnect between the two entities?
No, I think you have to look. The disconnect is not with regards to the players. This is with regards to management. The PSL on the one hand, SAFA on the other. The PSL should be hand in hand. Obviously, they're an affiliate of SAFA, and rightly so. But they seem to be two different entities, striving for different goals, and that's where the problem lies in South African football, is that SAFA and the PSL are split. They split on working together, split on discussing things together and getting the best best possible ideas through. So for the highly competitive units, highly competitive environment. And I think that's where it's lying, not with the players. I mean, early days in Bafana when we were there, SAFA had just started. So they were also getting their whole act together. You know, they were finding their feet. So we had to find our feet together. And eventually we did bring SAFA and the players closer together. But I believe today's problem lies in organizations, and the PSL and SAFA. They're so distant. They seem to be wanting to be separate bodies. Meanwhile, they shouldn't be.
Do you know why that this is the case? If you had to give an opinion as to why this is the case, what would you say?
Well, there's power struggles, isn't it? I mean, the power struggles of everyone, instead of everybody coming together. I believe Mr. Patrice Motsepe is trying to get it closer knit family. He's trying to bring it closer together, all entities. But it's going to take a while because the thought processes are different from each side of the fence.
Okay, fair enough. I completely understand that. Funny enough, that's a brilliant segue into the next question I ask you. Last season, the head coach of Mamelodi Sundowns, Rulani Mokoena, spoke about how he hardly ever speaks to Coach Hugo Broos about the players that he selects. And given that, you know, quite a large part of his team is made up of Sundowns players at the moment, it's not really great hearing. Do you think it's imperative that PSL coaches and the national team head coach have a good rapport with each other and are in constant communication with each other?
Yeah, I believe that is the way to go. But at the same time, there was talk of Bruce trying to make contact with the coaches and that. So I don't know where the blame lies, and it's not for me to say where the blame lies. But yes, it should happen. There should be constant just inquiring about how players are, especially before you select to say, you know, especially if there's some injury concerns and the lack. But at the same time, you know, it's up to the PSL coaches to also sort of take the national coach into consideration as well.
Definitely. It's very rare that, especially in a global sense, it's very rare when, or actually it's never happened, whereby a coach from a foreign country has ever won the FIFA World Cup with a team that's not the native nation to them. Do you think that it's imperative that, you know, if you are to be successful as a nation on the world stage, that you need to be coached by a native of that specific country and maybe not a foreigner like we do have at the case, as is the case right now with Bafana?
No,
I mean, you guys were successful with a native coach.
Look, I mean, it helps. It helps. And I'm going to go through various aspects. Obviously, it helps because they know the culture of the country. They know what makes players tick, or they should know what makes players tick in that environment. And there are highly, highly competent South African coaches that could do that job. But at given at the same time, it's not a be an end, or it's not a point of view that has to happen. No, obviously each federation has their decisions on who that, and it's slightly different in Africa. Maybe not in the major ones like South Africa, Senegal, the likes, but certainly lower down, you know, there might not be the competent coaches in other African countries that. So I don't think you can make it across the board sort of a statement. I think it all depends on what country it is and where you're located, and obviously an environment of the structures and everything pertaining there too. So, but on that, it certainly helps because you know the culture of the players and what makes them tick. And we do have competent coaches that you could call on to do the job.
Okay. That's interesting. I mean, you yourself, if I stand to be corrected, but you yourself, you hold a UEFA A license. I wanted to find out, is do you think it's imperative that coaches at the top level, not actually not just at the top level, even at the youth structures, do you think it's important for them to get such accreditation as far as coaching if we want to see our countries players develop to a high standard? Is it necessary for even at a youth level for our coaches to have UEFA A licenses, UEFA Pro licenses? Do you think it's an important thing?
No, they don't need UEFA. They can get CAF.
CAF,
They
yes.
can get CAF licenses, which are highly commendable as well. They're on actually the same level as all the UEFA licenses. It's just they've got to go into those. I'll just give you a little bit of an insight that CAF have restructured their whole coaching department, coach education department, and they. What was happening on the African continent to the detriment of coaching was that in South Africa, being a country that's always had influence from Europe, and ourselves being really up there with the highest standards of coaching in our country, we would do just for instance a CAF A license, it would take us the set required hours to do that. Okay, of 180, 240, whatever it was. Whereas you go down the road, and I'm not using them as an example, I'll just say you go down the road and you go to, let's say, Burundi or something, and they're doing that same license in 10 days. It's not feasible. So you have to have some structure within on the African continent that pertains to minimum requirements for the Pacific licenses. Minimum hours, minimum quality, performance, the whole lot. So, and that's what they did. That's why, so CAF had to restructure that all because it was a little bit disjointed. And also the database wasn't really, really there. And so they have done that, but it's taken a long, long time for them to put it into the license were out of action for about 2.5 years, even more now, while they were restructuring it. And it was a long time for countries like ourselves in South Africa that were producing licenses every weekend. We have a competent instructors in our country that were doing the job. And we're doing it at the highest level. So we were the first on the African continent to have the pro license. We had 60 of us that did the pro license. There was two pro licenses that were done. There were around about just under 60 coaches that did it. And so we have 60 competent coaches in this country that have got a pro license. Which it was never on the African continent. You had to have gone on other countries had to have gone to Europe to get a pro license or wherever, maybe Asia or so. So, but we had it because we were aligned with Germany at that time, in our coach education structure with Horst Kreter and the likes, So, we did the licenses and so that's so from that aspect, with what you're coming back to your question, is that those licenses have to now start getting done. The infrastructure has to be put in place because, yes, our youth coaches have to be the best qualified that you possibly can have. We have academies all across the country that are getting coached, not necessarily by the correct standard of coaches. And so, but there's besides that, you've got to have a competitive structure in which to play for these coaches to have their players play in. It's not just the coaching side, it's the infrastructure of competition, refereeing at that level, competitive leagues put into place in the various standards of play, whether it's academy leagues, And like that, like what's happening really in Gauteng, they've got the Gauteng Development League, where you've got really, really good amateur clubs combining themselves with PSL youth structures to form a very, very competent league that's getting played, and an efficiently run league. And that needs to be now done in all 9 provinces, not just one province. And those structures all need to be put in place. And that's where you need to get going with what's going to really raise the level of our youth hugely. It gets done in rugby because rugby had the school's infrastructure in which they do it. It's a very, very competent school structure where the schools come and they play competitively countrywide, not just provincially. We've got to get that into the football. There are a lot of schools that have got really, really nice teams now playing football. And now we've got a former national sort of competitive league that those schools are playing at high levels week in, week out with the decent coaches that we spoke about.
Okay. That's interesting. Yes, you're right. Rugby do it immensely well. Just hopping on back to the school situation, playing competitively on a regular basis amongst the best schools. Was that something that was prevalent during your time? Was there a lot of inter-schools competition? I know maybe the dynamics might have been a bit trickier given the climate of the country, but was schools football prevalent prior to 92 rather?
Yeah, I can talk when I was at school.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, that's way back in the 70s, you know. So it was a different South African environment. Mm. I was fortunate enough to have a very, very good school structure at primary school. Primary school. And then when I went to high school, that structure, the high school that I went to, there was no football. It was rugby, cricket, and that. But fortunately enough for me, I had a highly competent league, you know, club league structure on a Sunday to play in the under 14, under 16, 18 level, which took the whole emphasis, which helped the high school situation for us. Whereas now, my very same school that never had one football team when I was there now has over 30 football teams at Northlands, or it's now called Northwood in Durban, North in Durban. Now they have that infrastructure in place. The Hiltons, I'm just talking from a KwaZulu-Natal perspective. Yeah. The Hiltons, the Markle House, the Marisburg College, they never had football teams then either. They've all got football teams, Westfall. And they are now playing competitive football at high school. So we've got to tap into that infrastructure. And then in the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape and all over the country, in Joburg, in Pretoria, and Gauteng. And that's what I'm talking about, where the rugby have got it right. We've got to now formalize a structure nationally, the same as what the rugby do, to play. And there is TV. There's now a TV channel for schools. So it's got to happen. And it's got to happen soon. And that's where you'll be able to really raise the level, tap into the talent, identify talent, scouting and that. And that will enhance it totally. And that's what infrastructure needs to take place in schools. And then get competent school coaches in place.
Of course. I wholeheartedly agree. Just moving the focus away from the youth aspect of having a better nation. We were talking earlier on about the need to export players to better leagues abroad. Do you think that players in South Africa are a bit too comfortable, like as far as their setup is concerned? There's not enough willingness to go to, you know, a lower league Scandinavian team to try to develop, as opposed to staying in South Africa and, you know, just playing football here in the PSL. Do you think there needs to be more of that?
Definitely. Look, we export a lot of players, very young players, to Portugal and the like. There's a lot of players here, over 100 players overseas. So we have that infrastructure. But with our top players, it's lost because, as you said, they have got so comfortable within their own infrastructure in South Africa. And that was critical for our time then when we had the likes of the Fani Madidas, the Steve Compellas, Lucas, Philemon, Sizwe, you could go through Ace Kuzes. They all went abroad. Eric Tinklers, Bradley Connells, you know, that's just to name a few. Mm-hmm. And they all went abroad, and they were also not in the top. Only some of them were in the top leagues initially, but it's highly, highly competitive, organized structure of league football in those countries, as you say. But the most important factor was the factor that they were in a different environment, which made them harder and more competitive. Okay, not in their own cushy environment that they have in this country. So yes, it was most certainly a factor that helps contribute to when things get tough in a football match, that they can get out of that situation much more quickly. So that was I think one of the major factors as well.
Definitely. Do you think the money they make in the PSL is a bit? Is also a contributing factor, a big contributing factor in the comfortability of the players here?
No, obviously it is. Yeah. You know, there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
It's great that our players are earning really, really good money. It's great. But now they're not so willing to go overseas to get those same amounts. You know, they'd rather stay in their own environment. And each one has their own decisions for that. But whether it's benefiting our football, I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay, definitely. Yeah, you know, you guys were the precipice and the paramount of what we aspire Bafana teams to be now. When you guys became African champions in '96, you didn't go to the World Cup, but you must have been around that environment just before they went to France. I just wanted to find out, was there a genuine belief amongst you guys that, you know what, actually, we're 16th in the world right now, like, going into the World Cup, maybe there's a possibility we can make a splash and actually win the tournament? I know it may have been lofty, but was that the mindset that you guys had at the time?
No, I don't think they had the mindset we could win it, but we could certainly be competitive. Mm-hmm. I mean, just prior to that, I mean, if you look at the teams that team had played against, that we had played against. We played against Argentina and drew 1-1. Played against Germany, drew 0-0. Just lost to Brazil 3-2 in that famous game, infamous game. We were competing with France 2-1. We lost in France. We lost 2-1 to England in England. Drew with Czechoslovakia. You know, so we were highly competitive with any team in the world at that time and could compete. So yes, but we were a very, very, very good team, very, very good team mentally as well.
Yeah, that's a brilliant segue. I wanted to find out how much those leadership qualities and strong personalities play in having a successful nation, and how are such attributes cultivated in, if they are non-existent as it looks at the moment.
Yeah, I look at the PSL teams at this moment and I look for leadership in them. I don't find too much. I don't find enough on the field. It looks like they get leadership before from their coaches. They go into the match and then they're in the match. There's just no leadership. They come at halftime, they get more instruction. That's where the leadership comes from, at halftime, end of the match, beginning of the match. There's no leaders on that field. to demand better quality in certain areas and aspects of the game, to get on to players that are not performing at that moment in time, to lift players that need to be lifted, and the various attributes that go with a captain and leadership. It doesn't have to only be the captain, but players in that Pacific team, not when things are not going well, to look at the bench on the side there for help, but to able to sort out the situation yourself by just instructing players to do this, do that, and let's change something in the next 5 minutes. Let's add, if we find out that they're penetrating us down our left channel, our left side, let's just for 5-10 minutes, let's just stop that and stop the opposition from doing that in various ways, whether we start attacking them where they're attacking us from and start making them get more defensive, or reinforcing that side a little bit with certain players, just adjusting their positions for that 5-10 minutes on the field, just to get ourselves back in the game. But there's no leadership for an instruction on the field for those situations to happen. No one will take onus to do that. Mm. And that happens in the national team now too.
Yeah, that's quite damning. Not great reading. In the last international break, we played against Morocco and we became the first team to beat them since their World Cup exploits in Qatar, excuse me. But prior to the encounter, Sundowns goalkeeper Ronan Williams and now SuperSport defender Siyanda Tulu, they claim that Bafana don't maybe get the support that they feel they deserve. But do you think, is it a matter of them producing on the pitch before fans fill up the stadiums and watch the games, or are good Bafana performances a byproduct of like filling the stadiums and having fans attend the games?
I think, you know, they are, you know, a national team. There should be support for the national team, but at the same time, you've got to earn it. You've got to do the job on the field, and the inconsistency of what's going around at the moment. You know, I mean, in the qualification process and that, you know, you 2-0 up, talking about leadership again, 2-0 up and you give away 2 goals, purely just organization, knowing time factors in the game, and they win that game, and then they don't get the Bafana fans moaning and groaning about how they can let a 2-0 goal, 2-0 lead slip and all that type of thing, you know. So yes, we want our fans to support the team. It does come with winning. It does come with that mentality of winning. They want to support a winning nation. And so I suppose you got to earn it sometimes, you know. You also got to earn it.
Definitely. You led the team, or rather you were the captain of the team that won the AFCON in 96, and you were coached by Clive Barker, who we recently lost, unfortunately. So I just wanted to find out what your personal, what made him such a good coach in your eyes, and what was the most endearing memory that you have of him during your time together at the national team?
Look, Clive was very special as a coach. A lot of people that didn't know his environment, and I was blessed to know his environment from a very, very young age. I first met Clive when I was about 15, 16, when he was selecting one of the provincial teams, and I was part of it. So, and then on, obviously, through association with Durban City, the early Durban City days when we won league championships, and then going on to AmaZulu and the LAC, and then the national team and so on. A lot of people said, oh, Clive was just a motivator. No, you didn't obviously know his environment that you were in. You don't become just a motivator and you win the AFCON and many, many league championships. You've got to know football, what makes football tick in being successful. The blend of the team. You can't have, unfortunately, 11 Dr. Kamalos. Mm. It's not going to work. You need Lucas to complement it. You need the Fishers. You need the Hellmans. You know, so all got their own attributes, what make them tick as a good player. Clive knew how to get the best out of every single player in his squad or what made them good. And that was, yes. So that was a trait that he had through all his teams. He knew how to, yes, motivate them. He was a very good in that area. But you have to know the football. You have to know football. You have to know how to coach and make an environment. And I've spoken about it time and time again. To make that Bafana environment a very pleasurable environment to be in while you go into camp. You're only in camp a week, 10 days to, you know, obviously for what you get in the qualifiers. And then obviously in a tournament, it's longer. But that environment has to be a happy environment for the players to be really happy so they can produce. He knew how to do that. He would let the Dr. Kamalas go, all the players go, maybe on a Wednesday after training in the morning. Let them just go and have their haircuts. Let them go see their family for the afternoon or whatever it was. Each player had their own decision. Some, obviously, the out-of-town players would maybe just go play a game of golf, go shopping, whatever it was. And he knew how to bring that in, but then to get them back in to the mode of concentration on the job at hand. And so Clive was very, very, very special in that way. He had that major, major attribute.
Wow. And then if there's like one of the most endearing memories that you have, like a specific time that, you know, that really encapsulates your relationship with him, is there one that stands out? Is there, yeah, a specific memory that stands out about Mr. Barker?
Yeah, Clive was a coach that was superstitious. He liked to, well, you can call it superstition. He just liked to have, if he was winning and his team was winning, he would like to do the same, he would like the build-ups to be the same to the match, the pre-match routines to be the same, everything that kind of needed to fill in and be in place for a winning environment. And Clive had, you know, in AFCON, Clive had this, when we had breakfast, pre-match breakfast, he would come down, obviously, and he would come and sit there on the chair, and invariably was next to me. We were just chatting and talking, and he would lean back like a schoolboy riding his chair in the class. And I said, Clive, you can't do that. You're the coach. You can't act like a little kid. And he would keep riding on his chair. So just by instinct, I picked up the spoon next to him, and I hit him on his balls. So, which, as you know, would be really, really sore. And he said, what? Clive, we spoke, don't act like a kid and ride on your chair and all that. And he says, no, Neil, man, it's just I'm nervous a little bit and, you know, it's my way. So I said, well, then you're going to have to suffer a bit week in, week out. And that's what he did. He suffered week in, week out because he wanted a routine. So he kept doing it. So I kept hitting him on his balls. And so he kept having the pain week in, week out because he was superstitious.
Wow, that's amazing. That's fantastic. That's such a fantastic story. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, it's great to see the lengths he was willing to go through to secure the victory. And then, yeah, speaking about yourself, you know, you had the unique experience of leading us to African triumph. Maybe at an awkward time in the country's history because, you know, we've just come out of apartheid and here's this white man that's leading a sport that's predominantly favored by Black people. Do you think that, how did you navigate through that? And did you notice maybe a shift in the way the national team was supported as you guys progressed through the tournament? I'm told that the Ghana game was a specific turning point for the way that the Bafana was perceived in the tournament. But how did you navigate that racial dynamic during the AFCON and during your captaincy as a whole?
Yeah, no, look, I mean, we felt that we had, for us to do well, and remember, we came into a tournament that we knew very little about. We were very naive in the tournament, and the first hurdle was obviously Cameroon, a huge power horse in African football, and for us to make an impact, we had to take care of them and take care of them well. And it's amazing how that, you know, everybody, yes, you talk about the Ghana game, outstanding performance in that. But that was a critical game, the Cameroon game, because to get a tournament off to a good start and get the people to believe in you. And then the way we played football that day was immense, you know. And if you remember that the Springboks had just come out of a triumph in 1995. So for us to get the country behind us, and the whole country, not just blacks, but whites, Indians, coloureds, everybody, the demographic of the country, was to put a performances behind together that would make anyone that might not have seen us play before very, very excited. And that's exactly what we did. You know, we went through the tournament just growing and growing. And if you had asked any of the players prior to the tournament, if we could win it, I doubt anyone would have said we would win it. We were setting our goals with immediate goals per game and getting out of the group stage. That's what our initial goals. We weren't thinking cup finals and anything to the lock. It was about getting out of group stages and then we'll take the games on before there. And it was imperative that we also won our group because we were based in Johannesburg in our camp. And that would mean we would stay in Johannesburg for the rest of the tournament, which was vital to us staying at altitude and all the likes, knowing our own and training environment and that. So it was little goals that we knew we had to achieve that we put forward for ourselves that we needed to tick all the boxes thereof. And we did that. So, yeah. And I believe, I mean, now, this Mandela, President Mandela at that time, I mean, he said, you know, what we've done for the country in that space of time, he couldn't have done it as a leader himself. Mm. Although I don't believe that, but he was busy on the right plan. You know, but he needed something to spark it for him. Mm. And we were there to do that. The Springboks were there to do that, and we were there to do it. Just to make the nation, which was our nation, you know, is sporting mad.
Mm.
For the nation to feel proud of, and we most certainly did that. And you could go to a farm in the distant Free State,
yeah.
A white Afrikaans farm. They knew about Bafana Bafana. You could go to Venda. They knew about Bafana Bafana. You go to the rest of Africa and the world, and they knew about Bafana Bafana. So not just the South Africans that were in the country, the South Africans that were out in the rest of the world. So it was everybody. And that was really, really what made it really, really special time to be a South African in our early democracy.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah, you clearly did Mr. Mandela a major service. So yeah, thank you guys. You guys did amazingly. And then just to end off, Mr. Tovey, I just wanted to find out, obviously, we're going to another AFCON after 4 years now. I guess it'll be 5 years when it kicks off. But we're going to Cote d'Ivoire and we're coming off an impressive victory, as I said earlier, against Morocco. What have you made of Bafana under Hugo Bruce? And what do you think our chances are of actually being successful when we go to Cote d'Ivoire in January, early next year?
I think they've got to have the same attitude, similar thought process as what I've just mentioned, about just taking a game at a time, have a really, really good start to the tournament, and then you'll gain in confidence. They had a really wonderful result against Morocco, so they're capable. They're capable of beating anyone the best on the continent. So they must just have belief in themselves, but they've got to manage the game better. They've got to manage the process within the game better, the mentality, everything that goes with it. And when they're up against it, have the ability to get out of those situations effectively well and to maintain the situations that are going well. And they've got to have people leadership. And that's what I was talking about earlier. They've got to get more leadership priorities in that team and stop playing as individuals. You know, a lot of them are just worried about their own performance, not the team performance. And that's got to change. And if they do that, they can be successful in the tournament. They can be hugely successful in the tournament.
Awesome, awesome. I'm sure getting a vote of confidence from somebody as permanent as yourself will go a long way to making them play well, or at least I hope so. That's it from us. Thank you guys all for tuning in this week's edition of the show. Thank you to Mr. Toby for your time. If you want to get involved in the conversation, please find our social media pages at SNL24SA to get in touch. Thank you, Mr. Toby, again for an awesome conversation, awesome stories, just a brilliant insight into how we get Bafana back to a prominent place. Hopefully we see you again on the African Football Unfiltered.
Thanks, Kamal.
Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Toby. I hope you enjoyed it.
Pleasure.